So I was thinking about how kids so often say, "Are we there yet?" when we're on a, when you're on a road trip. Maybe you say that too. I've just learned to say 40. How long is it going to take? 40. And that's because in Hebrew numerology, the number 40 means whatever it takes, however long it takes, essentially. So remember Jesus, you know, before his ministry, spent 40 days in the desert fasting and praying. It's a term for whatever it takes. The Hebrews, 40 years wandering in the desert before they were allowed to enter into the promised land. The Lenten season is 40 days plus Sunday to get to Easter. And so this idea of whatever it takes feels especially timely for this Easter, because it doesn't feel like an Easter like I've ever lived through, and maybe not you either. It's very unique, and it has a sense of, you know what, the resurrection will get here when it gets here. We can't force it. We can't just name the date and say, here it is, arrived. And so there is a kind of going with the flow kind of built into this particular Easter. It kind of gives us, because our lives are, as a whole, as a collective, are kind of recalibrating right now, right? We're still in process of getting used to a different way of life, and hopefully taking that inward and spending some time with that. We're going to talk about that today. So it takes time for consciousness to shift. It takes time for the resurrection. So that doesn't mean that there won't be, you know, Easter choirs, because there will be today, and maybe even Easter bonnets on Facebook or social media, or Easter ears at least, and there still will be brunches at home and Easter egg hunts. So, you know, as Pope John Paul II once said, do not abandon yourselves to despair. We are Easter people, and hallelujah is our song. And so we still carry that essence with us. We still carry that hallelujah as our song with us, no matter what the circumstances. In spiritual terms, I would say this Easter has a much more mystical feel to it. And in that sense, in this particular context, I mean, it has that sort of mysterious feel to it. It's a little bit less something you can put your hands around. And so too is where we are in life, right? It has... it's less predictable like the sun, and it's more mysterious like the moon. I mean, who can really understand the moon completely? It's rising and it's setting, and where it is in the sky, it changes all the, I mean, somebody else might be able to, but I always find it quite confusing because you never know where it's going to pop up and what time it's going to pop up. Of course, you can look at your phone, but that's different. So there's not that same kind of predictable sunrise, sunset, moonrise, moonset, and phases of the moon are quite different for us. And so it takes us into that mystery. So, and actually, did you know that the Easter is calculated according to the moon? That's why the date is all over the place every year, from March to April, early April, sometimes even later April. Can never really figure out when is Easter. And it's because it is calculated by the moon. So it's calculated according to after the spring equinox. It's the first full moon, and then the first Sunday after the first full moon. And so that's why there's always such a shift. So I guess I could say in summary, it's sort of a sister moon consciousness kind of Easter. If you know what I'm referring to, that St. Francis brother sun sister moon movie, it has that kind of energy to it. And we're going to explore that a little bit more. On Easter morning, you might remember the story, Mary Magdalene comes to the tomb where Jesus' body has been laid, or maybe we could say womb, because really they both have a kind of similar feel to them, right? They're both dark spaces. They're both places of rest and quiet. But the womb indicates the beginning, the new beginning, where that tomb is the ending, and we know they all come together. So there's a sense that she expects to find him in the tomb, but really that womb-like experience has caused him to emerge into a new form. And when she sees the gardener, she's asking, where is Jesus? And the gardener, of course, is Jesus, this man that she's mistaken for the gardener. And she says, you know, do you know where he is? And he doesn't get why she's not getting that it's him, because he's in a body. He's been resurrected into a human body. And he says, Mary. And I just, that I can't tell you how many times I hear that story and read that story, and it always makes me emotional because I think about that moment when she hears his voice and she recognizes that he's there. He's back. He didn't die after all. Imagine that for the people that are most beloved to you. In that in-between, you're trying to get used to the fact that somebody has just transitioned, and there's that sense of, you know, those stages of grief. We go into a sense of denial and shock. I remember after my father made his transition, I just kept thinking he was going to walk through the door, even though it was so irrational. But it's just kind of how the mind works in our process of transitioning into this new reality. And Jesus himself is in a process of transitioning into a new reality. And so Mary does what all of us would do. She reaches out to embrace him. She reaches out to touch him, to feel him again, to know that he's alive, and to celebrate with him that moment of surprise and shock and overwhelming emotion. And when she reaches out to touch him, he says, "No, don't touch me." And he says, "No, don't touch me, because I haven't ascended yet. I haven't arisen fully yet," essentially. So he's resurrected, but he hasn't ascended. So there's this sense of, I am also in an in-between stage. So don't touch me, because when you touch me, it activates that sense of grounding back to earth. And he's in this spiritual transformation. So she recognizes his voice, but not his appearance. And when he says, "Don't touch me," I can't help but think, oy vey, Jesus is in like a no-touch environment too. Like, we can't even touch Jesus. And so we too are in this no-touch kind of space, right? And why? What is the spiritual message in that? What is the significance and the opportunity in that? I think it's very parallel. So as humans, it's as if the divine intelligence of the universe looked upon us and said, you know what, they need a little space from one another. So let's give them some time to just not be touching each other. Because when we, it's just a metaphor, not necessarily literally touching each other, although it could be that too, but it's more about what does it mean when we touch each other? There's clinging, right? There's attachment. There's a sense of familiarity. And so what Jesus is asking Mary to do in that moment is a bit like what the health authorities are asking us to do in this moment, which is really what the divine is doing for us in this moment, which is to say, shake out the attachments, the habitual ways of being, the ways that we touch the world every day, the ways that we move with each other and we create with each other, that we touch society, that we touch our lives. And we're being told in a way, stop it. Don't touch it. Back up, give it some space so that the process can take place, the process in us, the process in our human family, the process all around the world. So that significant moment on Easter morning, more than any, feels so ripe for us right now. Mary doesn't recognize him physically and thinks he mistakes him for the gardener, I think in part because he looks different. I imagine his body looks different. It's maybe sort of a lighter, brighter kind of body. It's sort of a light body. It's he is embodied. I mean, to prove it later, he eats fish with people, and so he is embodied, but it's not quite the same. So he maybe doesn't look quite the same. So in this process, it seems that we're all kind of learning together, and you know that term critical mass, that seems really important right now. It's like if the critical mass, enough of us, in other words, the critical mass is enough of the mass, enough of our of the people, enough of society, awakens even just a little bit more, stops touching in the habitual ways that we do, touch life, touch each other. If we back up from that for a minute and let go of some of that attachment to those habitual ways, there can be a shift, at least for a critical mass. And when the critical mass shifts, the whole can shift. So that's really seems to me a little bit of what we are about. And what kind of not touching do we want to do? The ways of life that we have, the ways that we want to let go of are the ways that are of greed and arrogance and ignorance, the ways that are when we're on autopilot and we're not really being kind to ourselves or to each other. We're just kind of doing in that sort of autopilot driven kind of way. These are some of the things that we could stop touching for a while. And when we stop touching them, it gives us a little spaciousness, a little time to make that fuller transition to the next stage, the next way of being. So Michael Beckwith has four stages in a model of consciousness that I think is really appropriate to bring in today to take a look at where we are as a whole, where we are as a human family, where we are individually in our consciousness. So the first one is, and you may have heard this before, a lot of people have used it and named it in different ways, but the first stage is victim consciousness. It's that idea that life happens to me. And so everything happens to me, that means that I don't really take responsibility for things, right? So when things don't go very well, I can just point the finger at someone or something else or society as a whole or the president or whoever it is that we want to blame for our aches and pains. And so victim consciousness doesn't really serve us in any way, right? Well, I mean, we've decided that it served us in some way at some point, but it's time to move away from that stage. So that's stage one, is life happens to me. I'm a victim. And stage two is life happens by me. I'm a manifester. I make it happen. I'm a co-creator. It's when we awaken to the fact that we have personal responsibility, that actually our thoughts, our beliefs, our ways of thinking and feeling make a difference and make a difference in the conditions of our lives and the conditions of our world. It's that manifestor consciousness. Or sometimes it's called the victor consciousness. And so a lot of us have worked hard to move from stage one to stage two, to let go of that old victim way of being and realize, wow, I can actually co-create with spirit. I can make things happen. If we stay there, though, if we stay entrenched in that consciousness, it really limits us because it's not totally true. It's not the whole picture. If we stay there, we begin to think that we are the ones making everything happen. We begin to sort of creep in some of that control that's in our society begins to be part of our spiritual teachings and ways of being. And so we think, well, I can make it happen. I can make anything happen. All I have to do is claim it and be specific and, you know, make a vision board and all the things that, you know, all those tools that we use. I think we're in a really significant time during this time right between stage two and three. We haven't resurrected into stage three yet. We haven't fully moved there. That's where the push is. That's where the edge is. That's where that space is. It says, don't touch me yet. I'm not there yet. And stage three is when life happens through us. We become a vessel, a channel. When we are a vessel or a channel, we're getting closer to what the mystics taught us, closer to what the sages of old taught us, closer to what the masters like Jesus taught us. Life happens through me. I allow it to happen. Remember when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane during this Holy Week and he says, let this cup pass from me. He was almost in victim consciousness. Please, I don't want to go through this. I don't want to die. I don't want to leave my friends. I don't want to stop ministering. I don't want to leave everything I love about the earth, my mother, and everything else. And yet, in the next breath, he said, well, thy will be done. So that's that kind of surrendered space, that yielding space, that flowing space. It's really kind of a skipping over into stage three. And so it's important, too, to know these stages like anything else that we set up in for spiritual understanding or any kind of how-to, really. It's not static. It's not like you just live in one stage all the time. But we tend to hover around one, and then we break through into the next level. And then we might go back, and occasionally we might have a peek of the next one. But we tend to be kind of mostly in one. I know I've spent a good amount of time in stage two, and stage three is really calling now. Stage three is really saying, okay, it's time. It's time to let go. It's time to yield. It's time to step back, be in that witness space, be in that space that allows spirit to take charge, to listen, to follow that guidance, to stop trying to manipulate and control things as we wish them to be, and instead look and see what Spirit is offering us. I think it's so key right now. It's so much of what's being offered us is saying, come on, the next stage is available to you. Come on, get it. It's not just, it's not to you and it's not just by you, but life is happening through you and it can happen through you. And if you let it happen through you, watch how the kinds of things that we've wanted to manifest can happen now. We need that higher level of Spirit. We need that inside us, but also outside of us, that allness of God to call upon now. And not even to call upon, it's here, it's called us. And so God is breathing us. You know, we're letting that breath move through us now. That's what stage three looks like. It looks like letting go, receiving, allowing, yielding, and then following that lead. The final stage is verity consciousness or oneness consciousness. It's life happens as me because there's no separation anymore between you and the divine. It just is. We just are. We're in that as me state. That's really kind of a state of enlightenment, which we might get, some of us may have experienced before for periods of time. If we're in a continuous state of enlightenment, typically we don't stay embodied. But often we'll kind of take up another life or another way of being, much like Eckhart Tolle or Adyashanti talks about their experiences of, they had experiences of enlightenment and major change that happened in their lives and it maybe happened for a period of time, but then they kind of re-picked up the mantle of how to be in this world. So that is sort of a resurrection, right? You pick up the body again, you pick up the identity again, you pick up the ego again. But hopefully when you pick up the ego again, it's very much like that image we talked about last week in Palm Sunday where Jesus is riding on the donkey. It's the Christ riding on the ego, essentially the ego in service to the Christ. And that's really a lot of what stage two to stage three happens. It's that movement to recognize that Spirit is underneath all of this. Spirit is guiding all of this. Clearly we're getting that message, right? We're not in charge. We don't get to go out and go to work. Or I hear the next one is we don't get to drive to a park or a place and use those parking lots. So we're really being asked to stay more local, to walk where we need to walk and only drive when we need to do something like work as a first frontline responder or go get food or something basic like that. So these stages, I think, are really helpful, and I give thanks for Michael Beckwith for creating them. And I know that that each time we move from one stage to the next, that we shed some of the ignorance that was a part of that previous stage. And we feel that sense of freedom that comes when we have shed something that's been weighing us down. So Mary Magdalene, you might know, has her own gospel, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. It was found in Nag Hammadi, housed in Egypt. And that in that gospel, she talks about this very mystical experience that she has of moving through illusion, essentially breaking through illusion from darkness and despair. And one of the things she talks about is ignorance and shedding that ignorance, moving from one world to another. This is specifically what she says. What bound me is now slain. Ignorance is dead. It is in a world I was freed into another world. It's a lot of, I think, what it feels like when we break through another level of consciousness. That's what the Easter experience that Jesus showed us is about. It's about breaking through, crossing out, and breaking through to a whole nother level of consciousness. So in that way, there is a messianic kind of message, right? That I've broken through a level, a veil for you so that you can follow in a new way of being. That's what I'm talking about when I say the critical mass now. If a mass of us can break through to the next level, the others will come along and we can tip the scales, maybe even save our species. But we'll talk more about that on Earth Day next week. So this new world that Mary Magdalene offers to us, this moving from one world to the next as we shed that ignorance, that being moved from one world into another is a kind of rising up. It's very much that image or that idea that we talk about on Easter Sunday, this resurrection, this rising up. And what would Easter be without some choir time? So we're going to take you over to Mile High Church in Denver. This is a Centers for Spiritual Living church, and they're going to offer us this beautiful choral song, Rise Up. Enjoy.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round. You can't find the fighter, but I see it in you, so we're going to walk it out. Move mountains. We're going to walk it out. Move mountains, and I'll rise like the day. I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it a thousand times again. And I'll rise up. In spite of the ache, I'll rise up, and I'll do it a thousand times again. For you, for you, for you. Silence isn't quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. I know you feel like dying, but I promise you we'll take the world to its feet. Ooh, mountains, bring it to its feet.
So we are indeed rising up, right? Rising up as a people, rising up in unity. And what is it that we are rising into? What is it that we are resurrecting? Maybe it's ways of being more compassionate and kind to one another. More joy, more ease in our lives. I like to imagine that at a time in the future, we'll look back on this pre-COVID, this COVID-19 time, and we'll say, oh, wow, remember how we used to do things pre-COVID-19? Do you remember how we showed up before? And we might say things like, you know, back then we thought we were in control. Do you remember that? And now we totally get it, that we're not, that we have a responsibility, that we have a part to play, but we're not totally in control. And so we gave up some of that control, some of that false idea, that illusion that we broke through. And you remember how we completely lacked patience for any guidance. We weren't willing to wait to be guided by Spirit. We just were on it. We were just making it happen all the time. And so now we seem to know how to wait, how to be in the quiet, how to listen within ourselves, whether that is formally in a time of meditation or simply in that pause within ourselves, and trust what comes, to trust that intuitive knowing, to trust that guidance that comes and to follow it. That's always key too, huh? So we might look back and we'd say, yeah, we weren't very present, you know, back then. We weren't present with ourselves, with our own feelings, with our hearts, with our bodies. We didn't really pay attention when our bodies were tired or hungry all the time. We didn't really care for each other. We weren't always fully present to one another in the ways that we are now, in the heightened ways that we are now. We didn't really see ourselves as, we spoke a good word basically about being a human family, but we didn't really act that way like you would if you were a loving and caring family that cared for every member of the family. But now we see ourselves more as one global human family. Back then we just didn't know. And back then, you know, we in our spiritual immaturity way back then, pre-COVID-19, we're going to be saying in this future time, back then we thought we had to force the stone up the hill, you know, that everything had to be, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. That was one of the mantras that we lived by, no pain, no gain. And we didn't realize that the stone just rolls away when it's time on its own. And then we emerge, and we emerge as new people in that next stage of consciousness. And it shifts just like that. Back then, we didn't know. We feared that moon-like divinity. We feared the divine feminine. We feared that way of being because it was something that couldn't, it wasn't so predictable. It wasn't so something that we could control and categorize and divvy up and name and label. It wouldn't allow itself to be pinned down like that. It was more of movement. And it was more of rest that was based in that movement. It was more of that kind of sense of harmony and that sense of openness and receptivity and allowing, more of that kind of stage three consciousness that we just talked about. So we don't fear that so much anymore like we used to. In fact, we're getting more harmonious in our masculine and feminine energy as individuals and as a whole. And maybe we would say, you know, remember how we used to do all the time and that sort of got us do, you know, as a result because it was so, it was so much energy expended without a lot of prioritization, without a lot of ease, a lot of grace to it. And that go, get up and go kind of went, right? Because now we have that rhythm, that natural rhythm to our lives. And so in technology too, we started to have a different relationship with technology and realize how important physical touch is to us, how much we need physical touch. So that became more important. At the same time, we recognize that technology is something that we can really use to build relationships, not as a barrier to relationships. So now we use technology in a whole different way. Wow, I barely remember that old way we used to be. And I really like the way we are now. It's kinder, it's easier, it's more effective. Everybody's included. That's how I imagine the shift happening and the ways that we might talk about it if we really use this time as our incubation time, if we really use this time wisely to let it allow the shift in consciousness that we all long for, that we all talk about all the time. It's like we're being given it on a silver platter. And I know it's not a silver platter in terms of, again, this isn't, you know, it's not what we asked for. I'm well aware, and we all are well aware, that there is grief in this, that there is illness in this, that there is death in this. It's not what we wanted, but it's what's here. And there is something here that's really valuable for us for the long run, for the greater good, for all of us, for a different way of life that's being offered to us. That will be the resurrection when it comes. That can be the resurrection when it comes. So what does it require? A little patience, a little presence. A little more patience and a little more presence every day will go a long way through this process. I don't know if you remember last week, or some of you may not have been with us, but last week I told the story about how I confronted death in a death ceremony, and the symbol that I used for life was this egg. It was the egg that represents life, just very much like Easter eggs represent life, right? And I didn't know then, when I was telling you that story, or when the story itself happened to me in reality, this story that I found out about since. It's a story about Mary Magdalene. Apparently, Mary Magdalene, when she was an apostle, you know, the disciples become apostles or teachers after Jesus left them. So he was their main teacher, and they were the followers, disciples. They became the apostles of the teachings afterwards. And so when Mary Magdalene was an apostle, she was invited to a banquet. And the Roman Emperor Tiberius was the emperor at the time, and so he was presiding over the banquet. And when she met him for the first time, she held up an egg. And she said, "Christ has risen." And he doubted her. And he challenged her. And he said, "No sooner than that egg in your hand is going to turn bright red, will that mean that Christ has risen?" And then guess what happened? The egg turned red right before them. And many say that's how we got the tradition of dying Easter eggs. So some say that we can't do this, or that it's not even about a spiritual shift. But I don't think that's you or me. I believe that we're really part of that critical mass that can shift consciousness. And those who are ready for it, those who are willing to hear, as Jesus said, those who have ears to hear will hear, will move with us in this potent possibility right now that we have before us. I think it comes down to being present with what we have. And yes, being patient, but not like we're waiting for something necessarily, because presence just is presence, right? If we're fully present, we're not really like waiting in line, for example. We're just there. We're just with whatever is before us. That's the offering. If we stay with it, if we stay with it really fully in our hearts, in our minds, in our spirits, something's going to break through here. Something's going to transform. Sure as that egg in my hand just turned from white to red. Or, well, you saw probably a little switcheroo there. But anyway, that's kind of the switcheroo that's happening in us, that there is a shift. So I want to invite you to join me in this as we close out together, as we share together, as Pope John II reminded us that we are Easter people, and hallelujah is our song, and we can do this. So let's speak our affirmation together. I am present and patient as Spirit resurrects through me. And so it is. Happy Easter.